good God almighty. Okay. Hi. Seriously? This is just wrong. Okay. Hi, my name is Joe. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. Am I hollering? Is it too loud? Is it startling for you? Okay, don't let me trigger you. Probably will. My sobriety date is August the 5th of 1991. I have 28 years of recovery, not just sobriety, recovery. Thank you for this opportunity. Telling my story makes me exceedingly uncomfortable. I'd much rather talk about y'all than me, mainly because I drank a lot from a very young age, and I don't remember a lot of it. So every time you come and hear my story, it's going to be a little different. You know, I don't remember it all. But every time I do, I'm so grateful that I do, because it makes me examine my experience, and I'm awestruck. Oh, see, I'm already getting emotional. I'm awestruck by how far I've come, because I know where I've been, sort of. I drank a lot. So, being nervous as I am, I invite you to all be here with me. We're going to do three breaths. Pretend like you're taking a big old drag of your cigarette. Okay, so everybody breathe out. Take a nice, deep, big breath in. Hold it for just a second. And then let it out. Slowly and completely through your mouth. Take another deep breath in. Feel it fill your belly. Shoulders drop from your ears. Feel your butt in your chair. Blow it out. Slowly and completely, like you're blowing out a straw. Take another breath in. Really feel the air go all the way to your fingers and toes, all throughout your body. Feel the blood coursing through your veins. And then blow it out slowly and completely. Feel the weight of your body in your chair, feet on the floor. Hi there. Now we're all here, or at least I am. So, I am here to share my story of my spiritual malady that manifested in alcoholism and drug addiction. Ta-da! Maybe y'all can relate. I'm going to share about my childhood. I do this so that I can be an example of recovery. You can recover from anything that happened to you through working these steps and connecting to that power greater than yourself. Not grin and bear it. Not white knuckle it. Not hold it back and be strong. Fuck that. I cuss a lot, so sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. But actually become friendly with it. There's nothing that's happened in your past that's so bad that you can't become friendly with it, because guess what? It's already happened. And you've already survived it. So my goal is to get past the survival part and start thriving in this life. So here I go. Grew up in an alcoholic home. Sound familiar? Probably so. Unfortunately, I'm not the exception. My parents were in their early 30s and the mid-60s, and they partied hard. I began drinking as a toddler. As soon as I could walk and pull myself up to the table where the old curled Swiss cheese was from sitting out so long and the warm olives, there were also drinks. And so I'd make my way along the table and start knocking them back. And my parents thought it was funny and cute, right? Once again, mid-60s. I was born in 63. And I got attention. I got a lot of attention, a lot of positive reinforcement. I asked my brother later, I was like, you know, he's 4 years older than me. I've always heard these stories. Is this true? Because honestly, I could have made it up. And he's like, well, let's just put it this way. You were always in the front room with the grown-ups. I was in the back with the kids. But when we would come out, you would always be asleep somewhere, under a table, on the front porch. You slept a lot. And it was because I had passed out from a very young age. My mom, when I started school, I would come home from school and my mom would have wine and cheese ready for me, and I would tell her about my day, and then stepdad would start making margaritas, you know, just regular stuff. And that was how I grew up. My mom was agoraphobic, and so she didn't like to leave the house. I was her connection to the outside. I had my first blackout at 8 years old, blackout that I remember at 8 years old. I was using aspirin and caffeine and Midol, which is caffeine, to get a buzz and help with the hangovers. So I was at this New Year's Eve party that my mom's cousin was throwing. And the reason I remember this, I was 8 years old, is he said, and I had already been pre-drinking and all that stuff, but he said, come on up here, and I want you to have a juice glass of cold duck for every year you've been alive. And I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do this. So he started pouring them, and I started knocking them back. And we're little people. I probably weighed maybe 60 pounds. And so I continued on with the party. I don't know what I did after that because I was in blackout. But I remember coming to, and I was in the living room where no one goes, right, with the white carpet and the plastic on the couch. And I had apparently fallen off the couch and knocked over the coffee table. And I woke up, and there was all of these concerned eyes looking at me. Are you okay? Are you okay? And as sick, I probably should have gone to the hospital for alcohol poisoning, but as sick as I was, the thought was, this is how I want to feel for the rest of my life. I'm 8 years old. It was clear as a bell. This is what I'm going to chase for the rest of my life. So that's what I did. My drinking got worse. My parents' drinking got worse. I was born to very loving parents, very sick parents. They were physically sick with alcoholism. They were emotionally sick. They were mentally ill, untreated, and, of course, spiritually sick. There was emotional abuse. There was sexual abuse. I asked my brother one time, that's later. I'll get to that later. And I like to talk about what happened to me in the past using the terminology in the fourth column, in the fourth step, right? I learned how to relate to women through my mom. When I took care of her when she was drunk and whatnot, when I would be her friend, when I would help her with her problems with my stepdad, I got praise. I got my self-esteem. I got emotional security. I got physical security. I got fed when she wasn't so loaded. So as long as I could make sure she was okay, all of my basic instincts of life were taken care of. So that's how I learned how to relate to women. I used my sexuality with my stepdad to learn to relate to men. If I could intervene and throw myself under the bus for her, for my mom, then he would leave my mom alone and there would be a lot less fighting, and I would feel safe, and the potential for violence would be less, and all that sort of thing. So that's how I learned to relate to men. That was my purpose. My purpose for women was to take care of them. My purpose for men was to take care of them. So my delusion that I came out of that with was, I could and must control the world and its people to help me feel comfortable and safe. I played God, but I was in that state of dependence at the same time. I was given a lot of power, and it felt good, because I felt very powerless. And yet, I was dependent on these sick people to behave well for my security. So, fear. I was riddled with fear all my life. And I was given a solution to that fear, drinking to oblivion. That was my goal. If I could drink to passing out and be really hungover, my mom would take care of me, and that felt good, and less would be asked of me. So they were my gods. As kids, our parents are our gods. They were unstable, and it was chaotic, and they were physical and emotional threats to me. And I was biochemically challenged because of all the alcohol. And I was abusing St. Joseph's baby aspirin, you know, like we do, until I could find real drugs. So that was my childhood until puberty and like 16. I was in fight or flight mode most of the time. There was always the threat of violence. It never occurred, but I knew it was there, and if it happened, it would be bad. So I came out of that literally and into sobriety, not trusting the ground that I walked on. I have PTSD, and I've dealt with that through the steps and outside help, and I can tell you I'm 99% on the other side of that. I still have responses. I still have panic attacks occasionally, but they don't bother me. They're doable. It's not anything I worry about happening. If it happens, I know how to deal with it. So I don't have fear around that anymore. Do you realize, I'm sure you do, how important that is? Because not just women have sexual trauma, men have it too. It's a people thing. So anyway, more about that later. I learned that I'm no longer a kid. I couldn't handle that when I was a kid. I'm a grown-up woman now. You know, people deal with their abandonment issues. Well, guess what? Kittens, puppies, and babies, people. Kittens, puppies, and babies get abandoned. Grown-up people do not get abandoned. You might have been abandoned when you were little. You're a grown-up person now. You have resources. And you have tools. And that's how we fill our grown-up bodies in this program, with the help of a higher power. So I get to lecturing, and then I forget about my past. Okay, so I'm no longer a victim. Ta-da! There is no victim in this program. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was victimized as a child. I am not a victim of that anymore. My parents are dead. I was a victim of my resentments and my fears until I got them on paper and was given a solution. And I'm no longer ignorant of what that solution is, and neither are you. So we're responsible today. And there, it works. So if you can't believe it'll work for you, you can believe it works for me, because it does. Okay. So, oh. All right, so now we get to the uncomfortable part. This is the part I'm not crazy about talking about, because it's, I don't know, it's just weird. So, met a lot of dudes, graduated high school, went to college, failed out of college. Of course, I was taking care of a lot of dudes. And then failed out of college, got a job, which I still have today. I got my job there at 21. I just got my 35-year plaque. Yeah. Little overdeveloped security instinct. Oh, no, no, no. That's really not necessary. Overdeveloped security instinct, yeah. You could say, wow, look at her loyalty. Or you could say, wow, she's fucking scared to go do anything else. It's up to you. The jury's still out. So I'm at work, and I get this phone call from my stepdad. Your mom's dead. You need to come home. When I left for school at 17, I had this feeling something bad was going to happen to my mom because I wasn't going to be there anymore to run interference. 7 years passed. I was 24. Nothing bad had happened. All right. Then I get the call. Your mom's dead. You need to come home. So I went home. And turns out my stepdad got indicted for her murder. When I first went home, that wasn't suspect. But it was interesting because I never asked what happened to her. I just went home. And I was strung out on speed. Oh, speed. Once I found speed mixed with the booze, I could conquer the world. So we went and got an 8-ball and then went home. And we buried her. They exhumed her body. There was a suspicious tip that they needed to do an autopsy. They did. They indicted my stepdad for her murder. I made a decision that you're innocent until you're proven guilty, even though I knew he was way capable of a lot of things when he was using that he normally wouldn't be if he was clean. So I decided I'm just not going to decide. Went to his arraignment. The charges were dropped because there were two drugs if found in her system could be fatal. So it was a potential suicide. The jury's still out on that one. And I've decided it's not my business to know why my mom's gone. The fact is, she's gone. She was already dying of alcoholism. She had the distended liver. She had the hemorrhaging esophagus. So it was either my stepdad's alcoholism or her alcoholism that killed her. One of the two. And that's really all I needed to know. Now, the one thing I was absolutely sure of was that it was my fault. Because if I had been there, I could have prevented it. No question. No question. I was responsible for her from a young age. So needless to say, that's when my drinking and my drugging really took on. That's when it started getting ugly. Yeah, real ugly. So that's what it was like. What happened was, of course, I do like you do. You get married. There was a dude that thought I was a good idea in my disease. Bless his heart. You know, you hear about people taking people hostage. Yeah, that was it. And also my mom had been caring for my grandmother, her mom. And so when she died, I got custody of my grandmother. So now I'm taking care of a 86-year-old woman. Financially, I'm taking care of her physically. She had fallen twice, still working, still have husbands, still have a home. Overinflated security instincts, still have job. I say I was taking care of my grandmother. My disease had me going to work and doing everything, but, you know, Thursday night, I need to go blow off some steam, honey. I'm just going to go to happy hour. And Thursday night would turn into Saturday morning, I'd come home. Then Thursday night would turn into Sunday morning, I'd be home. And then towards the end, Thursday night would turn into Monday, I was calling into work because I still wasn't home yet. So he took care of my grandmother during those times. My last drunk, I was gone for I don't know how long, and he called around and finally figured out I was at this dude's house. And he called him and he said, "Hey, I've heard that my wife is there." And he said, yeah, she passed out in my living room. Let me go get her. And he rolls over. And I wait long enough for someone to have walked from there to the bedroom, from the living room. I don't know. I was hungover. And so I was like, "Hey." And he said, "You need to come home. You've got some decisions to make, and so do I." What a buzzkill. I'm already hungover, you know? So I get home, and that was bad, but it wasn't as bad as walking into my grandmother, who was just beside herself. She had lost her husband in 1987 of 60-some-odd years, and her only daughter in 1989. And she was left with me to take care of her. And she saw me as still, like, you know, 12 years old. "Baby, where have you been?" "I was at a party." That's all she really understood. She's Southern Baptist, you know. She believed in just being mean, not drinking. So she was like, "I was so worried. I was just so worried." And for the first time, I realized I was hurting other people with my alcohol and drug addiction. fuck my husband. You know, he's a grown-up man. Take care of your own self. You know, if you were married to you, you'd drink like I did. You know. No pity. No mercy. But when I saw what it did to my grandmother, it woke me up. And so there was a note from him that said, you know, you've got some decisions to make, and let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to have to make some decisions. So I'm like, fuck. So a friend of mine was a battered wife, and she had been over at the house, and she had left this pamphlet from AWARE, A-W-A-R-E, Austin Women's Adult Rehabilitation and Education or something. And I thought, well, I'll call them. You know, they'll know what to do. I just need therapy because of my fucked up childhood, right? If I just get this therapy thing under control and deal with my issues, then I can drink like a lady. I can do meth as a lady. So I called them. You know, it took me 2 hours of pacing and, you know, ibuprofen and trying to, you know, clear my head. I was still drunk. And I dialed the phone and I get, you know, I'm ready to just confess my life. I get Popeye's fried chicken. Can I help you? Motherfucker. And I hung up the phone. I'm like, Jesus, Joe, you're still drunk. You dialed the wrong number. Okay. Okay. So I'm pacing. I'm pacing. Okay. All right. Call him again. Make real sure that I'm dialing the right number, right? This is before cell phones. I was plugged into the wall. Dial. This is, you know, 1991. Dial in the phone. Popeye's fried chicken, can I help you? Shit. I hung up the phone. I'm like, okay, what's the deal? What is going on? And I think for the first time, I really prayed for something outside of me. I knew that I couldn't fix this one. And it scared me to death. So I was like, all right. So another 2 hours of running around. What have I got to do? I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I swear to God, this was the first burning bush moment for me. I haven't had many of them, but this was the first one. And I heard in my head, look in the phone book. We had phone books back then. There were these big, thick things, right? Some of y'all remember those. Because I was taking it off of the pamphlet. And I swear to God, they had transposed two of the numbers on that pamphlet. And these poor women had been calling Popeye's fried chicken. Popeye's probably should have just said, we can't help you unless you want red beans and rice, you know? So I was like, oh my God, it wasn't me. So I finally dialed the number. I got in. I got an intake. My intake was 11 pages, narrow-ruled, front and back. I wanted them to know everything about why I drank. It was them. It was all them. So I went to outpatient treatment, and they suggested 2 meetings a week in AA. I'm like, fine, fine, fine. I'll do whatever you want. Just give me my fucking therapy, right? So I was talking to counselors there and all that sort of thing, and there I heard women with much worse stories than me. And they had like 2 months clean. It's like, well, shit, that's fucked up. So I started to kind of sniff out that there was something else going on here. So I went to my first meeting. I was 36 days sober. I can't tell you how that happened. I drank every day from a wee baby. And there was booze in my fridge. I don't know how that happened, but I felt like I was walking about 4 feet above the ground. Not that I felt good, but things felt very surreal. And let me tell you, I would go to the bar and argue the existence of God with anybody who would listen to me. Because there was no God. I can't see it, feel it, or touch it, or taste it. It ain't there. Let me tell you about it. It was later pointed out to me, you know, you don't run around talking about the existence of fairies and unicorns either, Joe. Oh, that's true, because I assume they don't exist. Anyway, so I came in a vehement agnostic. Went to my first meeting, and there was this woman that I used to drink with in my first meeting. She was there at Western Trails. And this was way when Western Trails was on Western Trails. And I was like, oh, thank God Kim is here because she's so much worse than me. Bless her heart, you know. And of course, I made my husband go to the first meeting because, you know, fuck you. It was your fault, you know. You added to this shit. Bless his heart. And this was first husband, not this one. After the meeting, I told him, you don't have to come with me anymore. Kim's here. I think I'm good. I talked to Kim, and I said, hey, I didn't expect to see you here. And she's like, she's very dramatic. Oh, my God, Joe, I am so glad you're here because you are so much worse than me. Whatever. Well, she had 9 months clean, and I thought she was lying because, you know, Kim had a want to lie. But she really seemed sincere, and I thought, well, maybe there is something to this. So I found a sponsor. My first run through the steps was vague. Steps 1, 2, and 3, when y'all described the allergy to me, it made perfect sense. I knew that once I started drinking, there was no telling how much I was going to drink. I was a blackout drinker from day one. And I never wanted to stop until I was physically incapable of putting it in me. And I couldn't stay sober. I mean, the idea of staying sober never occurred to me. I didn't even know anybody. Of course you drink. That's just what you do. So the mental obsession, that part of it, and the spiritual malady part, that part of it didn't make sense. But the physical allergy I knew I had. Fierce physical allergy. And then step 2, I was in treatment and I was arguing about this higher power nonsense. I love school. I love academic. A plus B equals C. Just give me the formula and I will work on it myself. Whatever. This higher power, woo, God, whatever. And the counselor got so frustrated with me. She's like, Joe, look out that window. Do you see those trees? I'm like, yes. And she said, are you making those trees grow? I was like, oh, my God, I've been remiss. I haven't been thinking about the trees. That's really what I thought. Oh, my God, I've been neglectful of the trees. How could I do that? And then what she actually said to me registered. I was like, no, I'm not making those trees grow. And she's like, that's a power greater than you. Now sit down and shut up. Shit. Okay. And I did. And I began listening. And I got a sponsor. And I used my 11-page intake as my 4-step. And I read it to her. And God bless her. She had the best intentions. But she did not know how this program worked. I'm running out of time. Shit. So I did it, and she lit some shit that smelled like pot to me, but she swore it wasn't. And she did all this, you know. It was some sort of magical thing. And then she said, you never have to be that way again. And we burned it. I was like, this don't feel right. And I'm not as trusting in you as I was when I got here. But okay, we'll go with it. I knew I had car keys and I knew where the front door was. So I left and she said, okay, now just keep going to meetings. It's all good now. And I got really pissed. I was mad. I was restless. I would say I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I was pissed. All of the things that I had been drinking to not feel came out. And they were bubbling up because guess what? I was not numb anymore. And luckily, a gal that I went to treatment with said that she had this sponsor who gave her exercises to do out of this book. I was like, ooh, I like school. Can we do exercises? I want to do exercises. So I got Vera, was my first sponsor. And, she was a hard ass. But I love her to pieces. She explained to me the process of step four. She didn't even go through one through three. She didn't want to argue with me and waste my time. She was just like, let's just get you on step four, shall we, before you blow someone's brains out. Started doing step four, and she had me do it with that gal, that sponsee of hers. And it took me 30 minutes. We sat down with the sheets. I checked some columns. And the whole time I kept telling Pat, there's more to say. I have so much more to say. And she's like, I want to hear it. This is what Vera did with me. This is what we're doing. Shut up. Check the box. And I'm like, and she said, you're going to tell her all about this in the fifth step. I'm like, okay. Well, then I got to my fifth step. Woo, poor Vera. But she helped me see patterns. And the one thing that Vera gave me, she gave me my power back. Every time I started talking about what they did to me, she'd go, are they here right now? I don't see anybody here but me and you. And I'm like, well, no, but they were there then. And she's like, are they here now? I don't see anybody but here but me and you. I'm like, fucking bitch. You've already said that. But after a few times of that, I got it. Right. They're not here. I'm responsible for my cause and effect with the world and its people today. What am I going to do about that? As long as I was drinking and using people, I didn't have to look at any of that. I wasn't doing that anymore. I had to look at it now. So I did the rest of the steps with Vera. It was fabulous. What it's like now. So I spent like years 2 through 8 just being okay with not hurting, right? I would throw, I'd have a feeling. I'm having a feeling. I would throw inventory at it. I would throw inventory at it. I would envision what it looked like. Me. It was all me. There was no God there. Oh, the babies. I love the babies. I'm sorry. Oh, I love the babies. So, just not hurting. It's perfectly fine. I love that baby. Okay. Just not hurting and throwing inventory at everything that happened to me. Every feeling that came up, I'm going to get past this. I'm no longer a victim. I'm a grown-up woman. Overinflated security instinct. Can't trust anybody or anything because I'm going to do it. And I wasn't growing. I was just holding on. I didn't fully understand step 6 and 7. Like, so you know a teeter-totter? You're on the teeter-totter, right? Steps 1 through 5. We're climbing up that teeter-totter. And then you hit step 6 and 7. And things start to level out. And then the rest of the steps, you're getting off the fucking teeter-totter, people. You're not on it anymore. You don't have to worry about falling off. Step 6 and 7 is where you learn to grow. It's where I learned to grow. And it's where I got my power back. Up to 5, I feel powerless. When I get to step 6, I'm supposed to envision what it looks like to be unselfish, honest, courageous, that woman of faith who's considerate and realistic. And God-seeking. God-seeking. And if I think of those things, I'm capable of them. Because I didn't know what unselfishness was when I first came into this program. I had no clue. All I knew was I had to protect me because ain't nobody else going to do it. I had to get me what I needed. And it was all up to me. And if I thought about you too much, you were going to suck me dry. And I was going to be vulnerable. So one little thing at a time, one little feeling at a time, I'd work in inventory with Vera. She'd get me to that vision. And then she'd say, ask your higher power to help you be that woman. And then I'd make amends if I harmed anybody. And I did that over and over and over, all day long, every day, to the best of my ability. Also, divorce. I was 8 years sober. My husband said, my kids had just turned two. My husband said, you know, I don't think I want to be married anymore. I'm like, dude, I'm 8 years sober now. It's all good. Everything's good. That's how out of touch apparently I was, because it wasn't good for him. I was not the woman he thought I was going to turn out to be. So, divorced, two little babies. The Joe and Charlie Big Book study came to Austin when I was 3 years sober, and I got to go to that. That blew my mind. It opened the program up to me so much. That's where I learned about 6 and 7. That's where I learned about the practicing, the walking the walk. And I had been doing that, and just not hurting wasn't good enough anymore. And then God threw people at me, right? That girl Kim, she got divorced about the same time and moved in with me. And Kim, you don't argue with Kim. Kim, every other weekend I didn't have my kids. And I didn't know what to do with myself. It was like not having my arms, right? They were a great distraction. And she was like, we're going on a boat. We're going on a boat with some people to have fun. And you're going to go. I'm like, oh, I'm not going. She's like, you're going. Okay, I'm going. And so I went, and I learned how to be social. People like Chris appeared in my life. If you're trying to be invisible, don't stand near him, because he'll get on you. And then people will see you. It's been one of the biggest blessings in my life, being able to have people see me. And it's still one of the scariest things in the world. God threw people like that at me and said, just not hurting is not good enough anymore. There's a life full of joy. There's this stuff called fun. I didn't know a lot about fun. I was just busy trying not to die for a long time. So I started working the steps. And my step 6 and 7 became different. Now, notice I haven't really talked about God up to this point. God was just this thing that I said to keep people off my back. I love the electricity analogy. I like science and I like that sort of thing. Even today, my higher power is more like gravity or sunshine. It's not personal. I don't think there's this thing out there that has my highest good in mind. I think there are laws of nature. And if I align myself with those laws of nature, life becomes easy. Life becomes doable. You know, if I'm not walking around with, first of all, being half unconscious because I'm loaded, people are less likely to take advantage of me. It's funny how that works. That, to me, is a power greater than me. And I have that power inside of me, deep down inside every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of this power greater than you. There's a little electrical spot on your heart that makes your heart beat. It just does it. No one knows why. No one knows why. It just does it. That's a power greater than you. Once again, gravity keeps me here on earth. Sunshine. You know, I can walk into the shade. Sunshine doesn't care. It just keeps shining. I can walk out into the sun. Sunshine doesn't care. It just keeps shining. I can work these steps and plug myself into this program and feel that power anytime I want. Just like those three breaths that we took. You have that at your disposal anytime. That's why I say you're no longer ignorant of where this power is and how to get to it now. You can balk at it all day long. Balk, 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 balk. Power don't care. Power just keeps on being powerful and saying, here I am. All you got to do is reach out. And you now have all the tools at your disposal. I've totally gotten away from my notes, man. I had all this really wise stuff to say. I guess you'll never hear it. I don't know. It's cause and effect. That's all you really got to believe in. If you believe more than that, awesome. But it's cause and effect. When I do this, I get this. Now, how can I make it better? We're all addicts. We want more. Let's use that to our advantage, shall we? I do this. I feel better. How do I get more? That's it. If I work the steps the way they're outlined in the book, and I examine the results I get, and I modify so that I see where the little gaps were from the stuff I didn't want to look at, and I make adjustments, and I do it again, and I do it again, and I do it again, every time you're plugging in, every time. And neurologically, biochemically, you're different. You don't have a choice in that. And you're better than you were. There's more peace. There's more joy. There's more opportunity for that shit in your life. When you play God, you decide to cut that off. You take a drink. You do a drug. You use people. You take shortcuts. Esteemable acts aren't quick enough to boost my self-esteem. So I'm going to tell some lies when I tell my story to make my story a little more interesting. What happens when I leave this podium? I know who I am. I go sit down. My self-esteem is in the shitter. Because I've just lied to a bunch of strangers who don't give a fuck. What is that? That's just me playing God. So when I lean into just being me and I use these tools, they give me courage. They give me courage to do it again. And when I do, it's not about drinking anymore, people. It's about life and living your life. Your recovery is your choice, and it's your responsibility. Nobody else's. It's not your sponsors. It's not even your higher power's responsibility. It's yours. You've been given the tools. Ooh, I'm getting all. Look at me go. It was also, but God dang it, if I only had 3 more hours. All I need is 3 hours, Lord, if that's all I needed. So another thing that I have found helpful is I try to consider every moment a spiritual moment. Every experience can be a spiritual experience if that's the way I choose to look at it. You have that power too. When shitty stuff happens, spiritual experience. Because it's about how are you going to respond to that today? You're going to respond the same shitty chicken ass way you did before? No, because you've been given tools. You're responsible. And if you choose not to use them, you're going to feel like shit. And that's nobody's fault but yours. Once again, no victims in this program. I talk about my childhood not as an excuse, causes and conditions. Things I get to share with other women to help me connect, and other men that help me connect. My dark past has become my greatest asset. Something else that was told to me, it was on a little card I got at Intergroup years and years ago. Honesty is the lack of intent to deceive oneself or others. Well, that takes the wind right out of your sails, doesn't it? It's not the lying. What's my intent? What's my motive? That's why In the big book, it says, divorce my thoughts from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Why? Because it makes me feel better, people. It just makes me feel better. And that's what we were trying to get. Comfort in our skin. Just being us. Oh, shit. All these things I wrote down. Okay, so, ta-da. Here I am, 28 years clean and sober. And I was talking to a woman the other day. She was bitching about her husband, like they are wont to do. And she said, he's been in AA now for several years, but he doesn't look like he's growing at all. I don't see him working with other people. And I said, well, there's a difference between sobriety and recovery. And that's what I have today. I had sobriety up until I was about 8 years sober. I had sobriety. Life wasn't on fire anymore. But guess what? I was always afraid. I felt like it was a house of cards. I felt like if I didn't do it just right, I was going to fucking drink. Or I was just all of a sudden going to have some speed. You know, that was like my dream come true when I was using. It never happened. But then I started working the second half of the steps, 6 through 12. Started really sponsoring. Not with codependency, but with detachment and love. I started really doing 6 and 7. I started doing step 10 all day long, every day. Do my step 11 meditation in the morning. Consider focused consideration of my plans for the day. My first break at work is at 9 o'clock. I go to the bathroom, take 3 breaths. How am I doing? How's that gone? That plan I had from the morning. Have my lunch at 11:30 or noon. Do another little spot check. Around 2 o'clock, do a spot check. All day long, every day. Why not? Used to do a bump every 2 hours to get me going. You know, I went to the bathroom. Federal property. I'm a lucky woman. You know, why not? We're used to taking those little pit stops to help ourselves. Let's do it so that it's a sustainable way of living. Then step 12, practicing these principles in all of my affairs and carrying the message. Don't even get me started on sponsorship. My sponsees have changed my life. Practicing the principles in all of my affairs. And it just means working the fucking steps. And it shoots me right back up to step one, right? Because I'm sharing my experience with the powerlessness and the unmanageability. So here I am. That's why I do this. I want to be more free. I'm not afraid anymore. I'm free. I know. It's pretty kick-ass. And happy and joyous, too. So how free do you want to be? I know, right? But it's true. It's true. So I want you all to just hang on with me one more time here. Let's all just envision for a moment. 28 years from now, you're all still clean and sober. You've been recovering. Someone's asked you to tell your story. What are you going to say? What are you going to say? What do you want to say? It starts right now in this present moment. You get to write that story. You've been given everything you need. It's all right here. So we're going to take 3 breaths again. And I don't care if you do it or not. I'm going to take 3 breaths, so fuck you. Okay. All right, breathe out. Everybody take a deep, delicious breath in. Hold it for a second. Feel your butt in the chair. Hear the beautiful baby. And then let it out slowly and completely. Feel those shoulders fall from your ears. Take another deep, delicious breath in. Savor that breath. Feel the blessing of that breath. Hold it. And then let it out slowly and completely. Feel the weight of your body in that chair. You have substance You have value. Take another breath in. Hold it. Feel that blood circulating in your body. You're alive. And then blow it out slowly and completely. Feel that moment. That's God, people. Thanks for sharing it with me.